Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggin Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling, brought to you by Zwift, where fun is fast. I'm Graham Wilgos. Brad.
Yes, hello Graham.
Hello Brad. Good week?
Yeah, very quick turnaround, San Remo Friday, you know, we obviously get gearing up for this show on Friday, Saturday's the race, so... Yeah.
Coming thick and fast.
Yeah, it's coming thick and fast now. And it's good that the, as I said last week, this year's calendar is back to where it should be. You know, so last year, obviously, we were dealing with an out of sync racing calendar, whereas this year, it's you get your bearings a bit better. We know what's coming up next.
Yes, although unpredictable as it turned out. I always feel like first monument of the season feels like spring is here.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that as a rider? This is
definitely, yeah. Yeah, it's a great race, San Remo. It's a great one to ride. It's the easiest one to finish. Toughest one to win, and that with it being the toughest one to win, that sort of stems from the fact that it's not that hard, hence why it's so easy to finish. Other than the distance, 300 kilometres, it's a very fast affair. You know, the first couple of hours always run off at sort of 50, 55 kilometres an hour, floating in the wheels. You get to the seafront, and then it's just sort of up and down all day, but it builds momentum. And then you hit them last two climbs, the Cipressa, down again on onto the Poggio, really. So it's and even if you get dislodged before then on the Cipressa or something like that, because the nature of the race comes in and off, it sort of darts in and off the seafront, you can just skip the climbs and carry on down the seafront. You obviously don't end up with 300 kilometers, but it means you can get to San Remo because there's nowhere to stop once you pass the second feed.
Presumably that's not the case now, though, because your data as a rider will be recorded.
Yeah, I don't think you won't get finished.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you were saying earlier, but obviously before we started recording, Sean Yates used to do it.
And well, Sean Yates used to finish the race, so he'd go up all the climbs as well.
Yeah.
But quite often ride to Nice afterwards.
Just carry on around the coast to Nice.
Yeah, to where he lived at the time. Had a flat there and...
sort of 350 kilometres
like
a day
that,
for him.
Yeah. Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, because it's not a flat finish. Well, not a flat extra section from San Remo.
No, whole coastline is dotted up and down. It's tight, tough. But today's race, it was brilliant, wasn't it? One for shows you never give up. You know, all the main guys were there. We had Alaphilippe. Tom Pidcock, really good to see him up the front today.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
But so many kind of lot of hesitation at the foot of that climb at the end of the Poggio. And Stuyven, I mean, much like, I remember, obviously, it's the same team, you know, amalgamation of that team when Cancellara won. Very, very similar attack, similar timing. And it was brilliant, actually. He got his just desserts, really. I think he was, you know, to hold off Van Aert. Sagan, I think it was the last 5 years. He's been up in the top six for the last 5 years. Yeah, before that, of course, he was second to Kwiatkowski.
Yeah, top six for the last 5 years.
That's quite a record, that, but never won it.
No, so he's second 5 years ago.
Yeah, so a rider who can win three world titles on the bounce but hasn't pulled off San Remo.
Well, again, it shows you how tough it is to win. So you said earlier as well, it's more of a lottery, possibly more than any other classic or any other monument. Even Roubaix.
Yeah, because you can always make something happen in Roubaix. Today, we saw the speed up those last two climbs was so high. It was attacks, of course, but it just comes down to 20-odd riders looking at themselves and one rider taking the initiative, which was Jasper Stuyven. And then even if he wasn't to win it, we look who, you know, Caleb Ewan, you know, pops out as a sprinter who could win the race had Stuyven been caught. So even then, it would have defied all the big kind of hitters of Van Aerts of this world and everyone like that.
Ewan second for the second time. So we feel a bit sorry for him because, I feel like he did everything he could to win
he couldn't
today.
Have done any more. You know, he's short of teammates at the end there to really bring that. You know, even someone like Gilbert, he's had someone like him just enough. He just needed one set of legs to close on Stuyven. But, you know, it was... it's still brilliant to watch. You know, the margins after 7 hours racing to come down to half a bike's length, just superb. Lots of teams there had two riders as well that come up short. Ineos, I thought Ineos rode bloody brilliant today. Well, it really did. Luke Rowan, that did a fantastic job up the Cipressa on the descent, Ganna, then we saw on the Poggio.
But well, they had four of them at the end there. They were drilling it off the front, like we're so used to seeing them do in the Grand Tours, sort of controlling the race. And then having controlled it to the point where you would maybe expect either Pidcock or Kwiatkowski to launch, and they didn't launch.
Well, I think Kwiatkowski must have got dislodged a little bit on the Poggio, because there was one shot, and it looks like Kwiatkowski's off the back on the descent of the Poggio. And Pidcock, the minute Pidcock stops riding, it looks like he probably got a radio call for that Kwiatkowski's coming back. But it was to no avail, really. I mean, I thought Pidcock rode with the sort of nonchalance of a rider who's been in that peloton for 10 years. Mm. Supreme confidence. Brilliant. Congratulations, Tom. What a brilliant debut out in Milan-San Remo, and lots more to come from him.
Jasper Stuyven picked his moment at exactly the right time. Thrilling finish, Brad. As we said, here's how Rob Hatch called it for us on Eurosport and GCN+.
And Stuyven is trying to get ready for the final sprint. Sits on the wheel of Søren Kral, the Dane. 6 hours, 37 minutes have been ridden. They're in San Remo. Villaroma is there. But who's going to take the win? Behind, they still ride. Behind, they still go. But they've still got to make it up. Mathieu van der Poel is going to start his sprint. Mathieu van der Poel is going to sprint now. Just as Stuyven comes out as well. Just as Stuyven comes out. Stuyven's going to the line. Jasper Stuyven's going to the line. Jasper Stuyven wins Milano San Remo. Yet again, it's Belgian. This time it's Jasper Stuyven, and it's the art of surprise at the bottom of the Poggio that does it. They left it too late.
Brad, Wout van Aert coming in there, third, behind Stuyven. I mean, we touched on it briefly. We expected so much, especially after the fireworks of the week at Tirreno Adriatico from the big three. Stuyven has showed that gamble at the right time, it is possible to beat them. I think this is the first one-day race that we've seen Mathieu van der Poel, Wout van Aert and Julian Alaphilippe race together in which one of them has not won.
Yeah, it just shows you, doesn't it? I mean, it's all the talk was of those big three this morning. I can't wonder if that's a good thing for cycling or a bad thing, really, that there's so much talk about three riders. But those three riders also, aside from van der Poel, who we haven't really seen in the big tours at the moment, you know, we get a lot of talk in July of him as well, don't we? I mean, a couple of years ago, we were talking about Alaphilippe. Could he win the Tour de France 3 or 4 days to go in 2019, was it? They're kind of really dominating cycling, or certainly the headlines or the talk anyway. I think it's a very good thing, the more I think about it, because it shows how much cycling's changed. It shows how much they've advanced the sport, really, in that sort of new age all-round rider who's, you know, all three of them are capable of winning the Tour of Flanders, as we've seen. They've all been up there, aside from Alaphilippe's crash last year with the motorbike. Mm-hmm. All three of them are being asked, you know, can they win a Grand Tour? Alaphilippe has obviously already proved he certainly can. He's been up there in the top five of the Tour de France. And they're all capable of winning Paris-Roubaix. They're all capable of winning a world title. Aside from Alaphilippe, they've all won world titles in cyclocross. They can all time trial. They've all proved that.
I mean, Wout van Aert showed that at Tirreno Adriatico, taking that final time trial.
Yeah, and who'd have thought that, eh?
Well, last even beating Ganna.
About Ganna being kind of unbeatable in the time trial. So, yeah, they're definitely... And I actually thought last year, when we got into the sort of season last year, you know, I hate to say it, but van Aert, it almost felt like, was this sort of a flash in the pan because of the season, the restructured season? But he's definitely lived up to that now. And, you know, when you see what he's come from, the Tour de France he had last year, the job he did there, the class he's shown on and off the bike. There's a lot more to come the next couple of weeks, really. The Tour of Flanders is going to be fantastic. We saw are we going to see a repeat of the Tour of Flanders last year?
You know, I hope so.
Aside from the crash, of course.
Yeah, aside from Alaphilippe going down.
I'd like to see Luke Rowe and people like that present. Luke showed some good legs today. Mm. It'd be nice to see him, you know, getting a go, because that race has eluded him. And I always thought for many years that Luke was capable of winning something like that, and still is, you know, on his day.
They always give him one chance, or they seem to. Ineos.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see this year. They wanted to be a bit more of a racing team this year. And they've certainly done that today. They did a fantastic job. They were the team of the day, really. I thought they took it up really well on both climbs. As I say, just kind of sort of a bit, something happened at the end there. We can't really put a finger on as to what the game plan was. But certainly Pidcock was looked like he could have gone another 200K.
What about the rest of that group coming to that final few hundred metres? Was it because there was hesitation? Was it because the three big hitters, as it were all looking at each other, Alaphilippe, Van Aert and
I think there's too many big names. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. The talk of everyone looking at Van der Poel, Van Aert, Alaphilippe, you know, they were the three sort of... And after that, you had the likes of Greg Van Avermaet, you know, the two Ineos boys, Sagan, you know... The eyes of the world have been off Sagan, really, haven't they? Three or four years ago, it was all about Sagan. Everyone's watching Sagan in the finals now. We almost forget about him a little bit now. But that's a good sign for him. I'd like to, you know, 10, 15 metres more, he'd have been looking to win that thing when you look from the overhead sprint. But
so he's recovering from coronavirus, we think. And this is the first, you know, the first time
prove
after.
Well,
no, but I'm sure he's got a test that says so.
Yeah. I'm sure he has.
Do we think De Koninck will be, I mean, aside from Caleb Ewan, who, as we said, did all he could, do we think De Koninck will be more disappointed than anyone?
Yeah, I mean, Sam Bennett, I mean, he had some trouble, didn't he, before the Poggio? He looked like he punctured or something.
I think he punctured with 40 Ks to go, and then he sort of used the cars to get back on.
Yeah.
But they had another option as well with Davide Ballerini.
Yeah, there was just wasn't present in the final there, was they? They've been a bit lacking, haven't they? I think, you know, aside from Sam's stage wins in Paris-Nice and few other things, I think they've been a bit lacking in the classics department.
Not as dominant as
we've used. No. So it'd be interesting to see how we get on when we get up to Belgium. That's kind of their forte and their terrain. So that'll be interesting to see how we go on when we get up there.
Obviously, we've touched on him as well, but Caleb Ewan on the Poggio, he was almost climbing better than anyone else. And there was a point even when he had a dig off the front, and he almost sort of seemed to rein himself back in.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of, again, he's like the new age sprinter, he's able to climb in that, but he's in remarkable form, really. I mean, it's difficult to think what he could now win the next couple of weeks, really. I'm not sure if he's riding Gent-Wevelgem, but that was an opportunity today to win a big monument for him. You know, I hate to say it, because the next time we'll see him will probably be the Tour de France, won't it?
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's not too many opportunities for the pure sprinter, really, in this day and age. And as much as we've said that this is one of the easiest ones to finish, one of the hardest to win, it's actually one of the few that we get to see the likes of, you know, Cable Ewan getting up there and having a go.
And like you say, so good to see Sagan back. You mentioned when we were watching the race, it was strange, or it still seems strange, not to see him in his World Champs jersey. As much as we enjoy seeing him.
Well, yeah, there's lots of riders become synonymous with those jerseys. If you think Alaphilippe next year, when he comes out that World Champs jersey, you get used to seeing these guys riding, and they become sort of a very individual characters because of those jerseys and stand out. And it is very difficult sort of seeing him just blend in with the rest of his team, aside from the World Champs stripes on his sleeves. But, I do think that there's a uniqueness to kind of distinguishing riders to become synonymous with the jersey, or it adds a little bit of character or individuality, I think, to the riders.
Was that important for you as a rider?
Well, I think there is a need, or certainly some riders, to express their individuality through what they're wearing, and not this sort of urge to not become a number. Lots of riders do it in different ways. Alaphilippe does it in his riding style and the way he rides, but he certainly stands out in that World Champs jersey and almost gets another sort of set of strength from somewhere in riding like that. You notice it with Sagan when he's not even in the National Slovakians National Champs jersey, that you just sort of tend to blend in a little bit more. And for us as people watching it, they can kind of go a little bit unnoticed. You notice Greg Van Avermaet, he's still very kind of got his gold helmet, gold sleeves and that in that AG2 hockey. It doesn't quite look right, but it's still his sort of way of celebrating the Olympic gold of four years ago.
Yeah, the eternal Olympic champion currently. Yeah. Van der Poel as well in the white shorts. White shorts, yes or no for you?
Well, if you're Van der Poel, do it hell you like. You know, and again, you know, if Van der Poel was wearing this sort of Alpecin kit, it would sort of blend in, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Dutch road race champion, white shorts. It kind of, he's very distinguishable as Mathieu Van der Poel.
You went white shorts, didn't you?
No, only for the time trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, me and Cav used to have a discussion years ago about when he won the world title. Black shorts is very traditional. Black shorts, white jersey, black helmet, black bike. It allows the white jersey to stand out more. Because it's the rainbow jersey is the standalone piece. It's not the white shorts and everything that goes with it. Riders pull it off. Mario Cipollini pulled it off very well. I rode Milan San Remo with him in 2003 as world champion. And I can remember him stopping. I was telling my son the other day, I remember him stopping about 80K to go. Side of the road, the whole team stopped with him. He stripped down, took his shorts off, everything, put new fresh kit on, white shorts, white jersey, and rolled up the peloton, helmet back on, because he didn't wear a helmet for the first three quarters of the race.
Yeah,
but he changed his shorts at the side of the road, just to be immaculate. Only Mario could get away with that.
Yeah, did the rest of the peloton sort of allow him to?
Oh yeah, Mario was doing whatever he wanted to do.
He was the boss.
Yeah. But I mean, we were in full race mode. He just stopped, but he had eight riders with him, and they brought him back up. No one waited for him.
Yeah,
But, you know, there's times of the race you can do that sort of stuff. And it might have been sort of drizzly at the start or something, sort of a bit of black specs on his shorts and that. But he wanted fresh kit for the final.
So you'd have to put a serious amount of forethought into that as well, to have someone waiting for you on the side of the road.
Vanity helps.
But
Mario was doing anything you like.
I love that. Were you aware of that happening in the peloton?
I remember watching it on the side of the road, but Mario had a reputation for it. He, you know, the car would pull up earlier for head of the peloton on the side, and they'd have the kit ready for him to go. But no other rider could do that.
No.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
you were in the peloton at the time. You were on the side of the road.
No, I was in the peloton. We whisked past.
Yeah.
And he near the front of the peloton. He'd stopped. His team car was already there waiting with the fresh clothes.
What was the chat in the peloton when you know that's happening?
I think it was just like, Mario's changing again.
It's just normal behaviour for him.
For him, it was normal. You know, he obviously didn't have his numbers on his jersey at the start.
Yeah.
So the jersey he puts on had his numbers on. So it was all pre-planned, you know, helmet. There was a great picture on his Instagram this week, Mario put up, of him riding at the start in that race. He's got headband, long sleeve, sort of three-quarter shorts on. And so that was all planned, 80K to go. I'll put my race kit on. We start racing 80K to go.
Did you feel intimidated when you're racing alongside people like Chipper?
Yeah, I did, because I'd grown up as a fan of the sport and loved watching them. There was a great funny story towards the end of that race. We had Baden Cook in our team, Bernie Eisel, of course, who works for Eurosport now. Cookie was trying to get up in the sprint. So I think Bettini had gone away with a couple of others. So Bettini won the race and we were sprinting for fourth behind. Zabel was lining up, Cipollini, Baden Cook, who was coming onto the scene then, who obviously won green jersey the year before in the Tour de France, won that year in the Tour de France in 2003. I think he just sort of nudged Cipollini a little bit with his head. And Cipollini had looked around and seen an FDJ helmet, not realizing, because it was two. So after the finish line, I think Eisel was top 10, Cookie was 12 or something. Cipollini was pissed because he'd not won the race and he was kind of very aggressive anyway. Just seen this Francis Dürer rider come up and it was Bernard Eisel. He thought that was the one who nudged him before, but it was just Ben Cook. And he swung his arm, punched Bernie in the face. Bernie's helmet was all skew-whiff and kind of go, hey, what are you doing? Why punch me, man? And but Cipollini was just, there was no reason to. Baden Cook hadn't done anything wrong other than kind of nudge him, like, you know, in sprints. But he thought it was Bernie Eisel. He took it out on Bernie, poor Bernie. And Bernie's glasses were all over the place. But it was just, that was what Mario was like. And then obviously, because he wasn't winning and he was world champion, when we got to Wevelgem that year, that was the famous one where he threw the bottle at the cameraman because he'd been dropped on the
Kemmelberg?
Kemmelberg, that one. Yeah. He was in a funny mood. I rode the Giro with him that year as world champion. And he didn't win many. I think he won one stage there, but he was sort of angry. And as world champion, he sort of had a torrid time compared to the year before, and he was very sort of, you know, kind of had a lot, quite a temper on him that year. But it was, as I say, it was great to race those ones, you know, see the likes of Cipollini, Pantani. I raced with Pantani in the Giro. He rode the San Remo that year.
That must have lived with Bernie for a while, though, like on the bus afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, we didn't have a bus. FDJ, we just had a camping car. But he was... it was tussled with Cipollini. I remember that was, that's what I remember most about it.
Any other memorable San Remo moments for you?
There's another one. I remember riding 2009 Milan San Remo, and Lance Armstrong is one of his first races back in Europe.
For Astana.
Astana. And I'm near the back of the peloton, and I'd never raced with Lance before that, actually, in his US postal years, although I was a professional. And he rode, I was at the back of the peloton, he rode up from behind, stopped for a wheel or something, and tacked me on the back and said, hey, Wiggo. That was it. He called my name.
Just want to say hello.
I said, how the f*** do you know who I am? You never know you do. It just shows how aware he was of the whole peloton and which riders were joining which teams and stuff. And, he, you know, very astute. And that made me feel $1 million. You know, I don't mind $1 million at the time. Little did I know what was going to happen after that, but hey. But at the time, this was Lance Armstrong, you know, and he was aware of his presence, you know, within the peloton. And for him to know my name, having never raced with him, I thought, you know, later that year, obviously, we went toe-to-toe in the Tour de France. But yeah, I remember, distinctly remember that. I can't remember the last San Remo I rode, probably 2011 was the last one I rode. Yeah.
2009 was the year Cav won it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, Cav won that year. Yeah, but just...
An even closer finish than what we saw today.
Heinrich Hausler. It was the fastest he ever sprinted, I think, Cav, that year. So it was
phenomenal. He had a hell of a gap to close as well.
To think that's 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. Brad, the Volta Catalunya starts on Monday, runs until next weekend. You can watch it on Eurosport and GCN+. Ineos going in with quite the team.
Yeah.
Some serious strength in here. Richard Carapaz making his season debut. Taking part in another stage race for him. Richie Port supporting Rohan Dennis. Jonathan Castroviejo. Luke Rowe again. And Adam Yates.
Brilliant team. Fantastic team. I think they'll do something. I think they're knocking on the door. They've got every other component right in the... they seem to at the moment. They rode well today, as they say in San Remo. They've got a bit of race miles in their legs now. Obviously, they'd been at altitude before the Paris-Nice and stuff like that. Carapaz, I've been watching him on Instagram and that training. He looks like he's been doing some good stuff. I just think that as a unit now, they're sort of in a poised now to do something. It's just got there's a feel that they're going to do something big at the moment. And I think this could be this week, really. Maybe not with G. I'm not too sure where he's at. I'd like to see G do well. I think that race was suiting me. It certainly looked good in Tirreno. But I get the feeling that they're poised to do something now. And that team as well, you get the sense with it that with Yates, Dennis, that this is their main business, this one. This isn't just kind of spreading their, you know, the kind of eggs across different races. So I think this time next week, we're looking at a performance, I think.
Of the three of them, who do you expect to lead there? So Yates we saw so strong at UAE, only Pogacar could beat him.
Yeah.
G... strong in patches but not overwhelming at Tirreno Adriatico. And Carapaz, we don't necessarily, like you say, know what to expect.
I think Yates will probably be the leader based on his form up to this point. He's ridden well in this race before. I don't think G will be too concerned about needing to be the leader and needing to put a statement out there. You know, there's plenty of time for that in terms of what he's gunning for this year. And when G will be ready, G will be ready. There's no doubt about it.
Races suit him.
Yeah. I think the way the cycling's changed now, he probably needs to be... G's a racer through and through and needs probably... he likes getting stuck in for his mind more than anything. And racing with the sort of handcuffs off, really, he's not insecure enough that he needs to sort of start putting a marker down to prove he's the one. I think he's got the faith within that team. He's done enough over the years to prove that he's capable of doing it. I just think for him, you know, almost even if he's not winning, leading the race this week, it'd be nice for him to just do a performance for someone like Yates where he tears the race up a climb and is kind of one of the last few riders left and, you know, gets all the sort of praise like we did with what we saw with Rohan Dennis last year in the Giro. A performance like that from G will go a long way.
Jumbo-Visma, obviously we talk about Ineos, we've got to talk about the other big hitters, as it were. They've got Sepp Kuss coming back this week.
Yeah.
And again, another rider that, like Carapaz, we've seen nothing of this season so far. Yeah. In terms of really getting down to business, as it were, are we expecting to see Jumbo-Visma and Ineos start to face off now?
I don't know. They've spread quite thin, haven't they, Jumbo-Visma?
Feels like it.
You know, a lot of Primoz chasing Paris-Nice. There were sort of calls of lack of support for Van Aert at Tirreno Adriatico going for the GC. You know, lack of teammates today in the final in Milan-San Remo. But their objective is the Tour de France, and you can't really chase everything. Although, as we said, riders we speak about now are almost chasing everything. So it begs the question, you know, where do you put your eggs and where do you put your team? It's a very, very splintered field in terms of the quality now and what people are capable. We're talking about a guy here in Van Aert who's capable of winning San Remo, Tour of Flanders, Paris-Roubaix, Tirreno overall, assisting someone who can win the Tour de France in Primoz Roglic. Also, the question is being asked, can he win a Grand Tour himself? Which is the answer is yes. Second in the world time trial last year, second in the world road race last year. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. And we're now talking about him. Should we have more support for him? Jumbo, they need to watch out. They need to kind of... This is where Ineos do it really well, is that they're not panicking across all sort of boards here. And, you know, they've crept up. Took a little bit of criticism for their sort of lack of performances this year. But here we go in Catalonia, and what a team they've put up. You know, that sort of sparks of that they're serious. And there's not, make no mistake, their goals are the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France, and they know how to do that. I think Jumbo, since last year, they could be accused of spreading themselves very thin and chasing everything a little bit too much. Whereas last year, with the lockdown and the lack of racing before the Tour de France, it almost favoured them because they selected their Tour de France team previous December, if you like, and they spent a lot of time together and they were very fresh coming into the Tour. At this rate, I think that they could be sort of pretty burnt out as a team come the Tour de France and not have the strength that they had last year. They've already lost Tom Dumoulin, you know, through other reasons. They're walking a tightrope, I think. Whereas Ineos, you know, they know how to do it, tried and tested. It's not about these races so far. It's about the Tour de France. And I think their lack of being present, as it were, although they're present in certain areas, like today when we saw, but certainly on the results end of the table, will probably bode them well come July.
Brad, elsewhere in the news this week, your Pinarello, or not your Pinarello, and you can lay this rumour to rest for us.
Let me lay it to rest.
Allegedly made specifically for you for the final stage into Paris in 2012. So a yellow custom-built Pinarello, or custom paint job at least, is up for sale for £7,500.
Ooh, is that all?
Plus postage.
Measly $7,500. Well, it's a good job it's not mine.
Not your bike though. I saw it this morning.
It's got a number on the back. I haven't seen this news story, but a few people have flagged it up to me. It's not my bike, no. No, far too treasured piece of history that to flog for £7,500.
Yeah, cheap at the price was the first thing that very occurred cheap. To me. But
that probably tells you everything you need to know then, doesn't it?
All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, brought to you by Zwift, where fun is fast. Thank you, Brad. We can follow you on social media.
Yeah, so we go.
You can follow Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you to our producer, Pete Burton.
Pete Burton, sponsored by River Island.
Podcast Pete. And finally, from me, Graham Wilgos, it's goodbye. If you've enjoyed the show, subscribe, share your thoughts, rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Brad, plenty of action, as we said, coming thick and fast this week on Eurosport and GCN Plus. Yep. Trofeo, Alfredo Binder in the women's peloton tomorrow.
Or 3 days to Japan.
3 days to Japan in the week.
The
E3 Bink Bank Classic. Yep. Plus, hopefully, Gent Wevelgem next week. Brad, thanks for today.
Thank you. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.